I had to do that with like the weirdest stuff when I got married.
You are on the record, and we will now be bringing the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency to order. Just wanted to note that the blue light was on, and we will be carrying over Senate Bill 631 until Thursday. And with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 406A. Bob, give us a brief description of Senate Bill 406A, please.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 406 allows a party changing name due to marriage or domestic partnership to retain or change their middle name and retain or change their surname. The measure declares an emergency and is effective on passage, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And we have Nathan White signed up to testify.
Oh, we do?
I may have to get in. I'm supposed to be in another thing at 1:20.
Okay.
We're going to caucus at 1:30, so I guess maybe you'll know.
Right. Good afternoon. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Chair Representative Holvey, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak before you today. For the record, my name is Nathan White. I live in Portland, Oregon, and appear today as a concerned citizen. I support this bill. 1 year and 6 months ago, I became engaged to a wonderful woman, Mary Beth Van Loo, now Mary Beth White. Unfortunately, she is unable to be here today due to work commitments. Her middle name, Elizabeth, is a family name on both sides of the family and honors her paternal grandmother, as it was her middle name. In order to make her name less common, Mary Beth's family decided to add the Beth, since that way her preferred name would reflect her middle name as well. In deciding what she wanted her new name to be, she wanted to preserve the heritage inherent in that name. After some thought and discussion, Mary Beth decided to take my name, but also keep both her middle and maiden name as two middle names, going from Mary Elizabeth Van Loo to Mary Elizabeth Van Loo White. Her sister-in-law had done the same thing when she was married in August of 2006. We proceeded under this assumption and continued to plan the wedding. A few weeks before the wedding, we started to apply online for a marriage license from Multnomah County. When we arrived at the desired name screen, we discovered that only a limited number of options were available to change her name, and what she had hoped and planned for was not among them. Thinking that it was a limitation of the website software, we stopped for the moment and planned to apply in person at the county office instead. However, after some research, digging, and calls to the county office, I discovered that the options listed on the Multnomah County website were the only options allowed under Oregon law. These included keeping her pre-wedding name, Mary Elizabeth Van Loo, changing just her last name to Mary Elizabeth White, hyphenating the two last names as Mary Elizabeth Van Loo White, or changing her last name and her middle name to her maiden name, leaving Mary Van Loo White. Now, mere weeks before the wedding, my wife was forced to reconsider her future identity on short notice. She was forced to choose what part of her identity she would abandon. A task that should have been a simple formality instead became a gut-wrenching decision. She eventually decided to the last option, becoming Mary Van Loo White. But because of this imperfect solution, her legal name no longer reflects the name she goes by in everyday life. In addition to the emotional costs, we have encountered challenges throughout the name change process as banks and insurance companies seem to be confused by her preferred name not lining up with her legal name. My high school history teacher once told me that if you think something is wrong with the laws, you should write your elected representatives to get them changed. It was with this in mind that I contacted Senator Shields, and he and his staff have been very helpful in proposing this bill. Oregon law was set in this fashion in 2007 when House Bill 3120 was passed, allowing both or either party to change their name in marriage or domestic partnership. It also cleaned up what was and wasn't permitted as a name change in order to ensure continuity of identity. I applaud and support this measure, but believe that a common and desirable option has been excluded. As mentioned earlier, many people, my wife included, have wanted to include two middle names in order to preserve a meaningful middle name, which may have important family significance, and an original surname, which might hold equal or greater significance. Two of my close friends will be getting married in the next 2 years, and both had planned on keeping their original names as second middle names and expressed dismay when we shared with them what we had learned. In conclusion, I would like to reiterate my wife's and my own support for this bill. It would allow future couples the opportunity to have their names truly reflect their new identity as partners for life while still preserving their old identities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from the committee? Representative Doherty.
Okay, so quickly, so basically what the proposal is that somebody can keep a first name, have two middle names, and two last names, like hyphenated last names.
No, just one last name.
Okay, just one last name, but two middle names.
Yes.
Got it.
Follow up.
Quickly, what if you already have two middle names? Do you have any, or would that even make a difference in this?
I am not familiar enough with the language of the bill to be able to deal with that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you bringing this bill forward after years of battling my wife's hyphenated name. It's caused us a lot of grief over time as well, and I pleaded with her not to do that, but she wanted her own identity to follow her for some reason. And so I can appreciate you bringing this forward. I think it's a marvelous attempt at changing the law that you've carried forward.
I have eight daughters. My name is gone.
Well, this bill, you may be able to retain that heritage.
That's right. So I'll just say on that note that my husband took my name, Kenny Geyer. We both have Kenny Geyers, and if any of your son-in-laws choose to do the same thing, your name will live on.
That could happen.
But thank you very much for bringing this forward. And for the record, Senator Shields wrote a little thing he wanted on the record on Senate. Senator Shields fully supports Senate Bill 406A. The concept was brought forward this session by his constituent, Nathan White, who's in front of us. And it's common sense that a person who marries should be able to keep their full name while taking on their spouse's surname. He urges an aye vote and thanks the committee for their consideration. Thank you very much.
Very much.
Thank you.
No one else has signed up, so I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 406.
I just had a comment that I wanted to.
Oh, I'm not closing the committee.
Yeah, just real quick. Public hearing. So I was just curious why we were adding more possibilities instead of just saying what it can't be. Because I think you might come in the future of somebody who has, you know, two middle names already and they want a third middle or something like that, instead of saying what they can be and saying just, it's a little more permissive that way. So that's just, mm-hmm. I just want to get that on the record as an idea.
Interesting. We'll take a look at the bill. We're not working the bill yet, so we still have time for conversations. So with that, I'll close the public, and thanks for bringing that up before I drop this gavel. So with that, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 406A. And we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 351A. Bob, would you give us a brief description of Senate Bill 351A, please?
As soon as Microsoft Word begins responding, Mr. Chair.
Well, why don't we have Senator Roblin come up while you're looking for that? I bet he can give us a brief description of the bill. Welcome back.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. And for the record, Arnie Roblin, Senate District 5. As many of you know, in the past 4 years, I was on the Committee for Indian Services, which is a legislatively formed committee, the only one of its type in the nation. Governor Attia was actually instrumental in saying, we need to develop a better relationship with the federally recognized tribes of Oregon and the state of Oregon, and the legislature decided to make this standing committee. And I happen to be the House representative to that committee, and Senator Farioli was the representative from the Senate. And we worked really hard to look at, last time it was police and allowing tribal police to help us with ours and have reciprocating agreements with the tribes on public safety. And we looked at other kinds of things, and we've had conversations in the past about how do we continue this unique relationship that Oregon has with its nine federally recognized tribes. And one of the things that came up from their perspective was we have this local government pool that the state treasurer works with, and our local governments can give money to the treasurer, and they invest it and so on in that investment pool, and then the returns come back to the local governments. And we thought that's another way where we can reach out and work with the tribes in ways that are unique to Oregon, but give them some advantages and can take advantage, but also to increase the total amount of pool money that they can therefore invest. And there are limits to it. There's also a short-term fund that can make an amazing difference. And some of the local governments that have used it have saved and made millions of dollars because of the investment. Currently, to invest, for example, let's see what I'm thinking of. Some of our rural counties have a fair amount of money in their road funds. But at current rates, they get about 0.5% on those money when it's in the banks. And if they can invest it with the state government, which they allow, they can make $2 to $3 million on their investment that they would not otherwise have made. And it has been a great relationship with the state and with these local governments to make ways in which they can earn more interest because our people are fairly aggressive. What we're saying here is we want to give, at least in the beginning, we'll start with this big local government pool, not necessarily go to the short one, and give the opportunity for our tribes to invest some of their money with the state and therefore boost the investment they can get, and again extend one more time where it shows this government-to-government relationship between our state and the tribes. So the bill is brought to you by Senator Farioli and myself after consultations with the tribes before, and I think it's a great opportunity for us and would encourage your support of this bill.
Thank you. I appreciate you bringing another bill forward. Questions from the committee? Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Senator, were there any concerns that you had to address during the process over in the Senate?
Actually, it went pretty smoothly in the Senate. We didn't see a whole lot of people. People felt that this was a reasonable expectation.
Worried it wasn't about the security of the investment or anything like that?
They will take on the same risks that the state does, and they have to understand that. If they choose to use their money there, they can win it or lose. I mean, they can earn or lose. That's part of the problem when you go into investments. But it has our state people have done a really good job over the years, and I think it's an investment worth making, but we did not get much pushback. And again, it's a mutual thing. They have to agree to give the money to make it work. They don't have to choose that. This just gives them an option.
Thank you. And Representative Kinney-Geyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering to what extent Treasurer Wheeler has been involved in the conversation.
None of this would come forward without making sure that the Treasurer agrees that it's an appropriate way and that they feel comfortable in handling that money. We have always gone to him first to ask about these kinds of things and see whether it's appropriate. And again, we have only had support from the Treasurer.
And just one question. I assume that we are not leaving any of the federally recognized Indian tribes out of this since we have a list of them.
Correct.
The ones that are in Oregon.
And part of the problem, interestingly enough, thank you for mentioning this, the only little blip we did have on this bill was that the way we first wrote it without listing all their names, it included a tribe from Nevada. Which we didn't, unexpectedly, we did not understand. But there was property, apparently in the southeastern corner of our state, that is part of their tribal stuff. Mm-hmm. But by not being careful about mentioning the 9 Oregon tribes and being specific about it, there was a concern that it might have been interpreted that others could have been able to use it. They cannot.
Great. Well, I didn't want to start another war by leaving one out.
So. I mean, I will tell you, though, that it's really interesting, and I hope that people, if you have a chance, we have our own office here in the Capitol building. It's down as you kind of exit from the west end of the building. There's a couple people, there's a secretary there, and our executive director is there part of the time. You should ask if you have any questions. The relationships that we're developing because of this commission are really great, and the biggest issue has to do with when an agency has an issue about a tribal issue, whether it's a road being built and they find artifacts or whatever it is, they have a single place that they can come and ask, and all 9 tribes will respond and get back to them fairly quickly. And that relationship continues to grow between agencies. We have now a relationship that every year the agencies come and report to them what the interactions have been. I think that relationship continues to grow in a really positive way, so that we have a better understanding of each other. And I think what you find out is that these are 9 separate individual governments. They run themselves differently. Being a member of the tribe is decided by them, just like citizenship is decided by our government. They decide the citizenship and the group in theirs. And if you assume that anyone is the same, you have made a really bad assumption. And it's important to understand that this is 9 separate governments that we work with in our state. And I think that relationship is getting smoother because people start to realize, oh, just ask. You know, we don't have to assume that because we did it this way over here and it was on tribal lands that were invested by the Coquilles, that it's going to be the same answer if we're going to go up here and deal with the Celestes, because it probably won't be the same answer. But if you ask, there will be a great interaction with the groups and the tribes. It's like the issue that we had recently with respect to mascot names. There's a tribal school called the Indian Warriors. It's a charter school on the Celestes Reservation. Mm-hmm. And they were told they couldn't have that name.
The pale face would have been a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, come on, talk to people and talk to each other as you're trying to make these rules and regulations that affect us all, because we want to be a part of the conversation. And I'm saying this is just one more way that we strengthen that conversation.
Thank you. And we'll recognize you have another bill to, in the Rules Committee to help strengthen that. We moved out recently. So.
That's true.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Have a great day. I'll go back to my education committee.
Thank you.
And I will note that the Treasurer's Office is here. I don't know if they want to comment on Senate Bill 351A. I think it would please the committee to hear you say something positive about the bill. Or whatever, you know, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Michael Salvaggio from the State Treasurer's Office. And firstly, I apologize for my tardiness. I'm trying to jockey 2 hearings at the exact same time. But I want to express the Treasurer's and the Treasury's mechanical approval of this particular bill. However, when it comes to endorsing particular investment vehicles, especially for entities that we do not necessarily have a pre-existing business relationship with, we remain neutral on that. But the mechanics work, and we're pleased to convey that to the committee. And I'll take any questions that you have.
Thank you. Were there questions?
I have a question. Any concerns at all?
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, none whatsoever from our financial perspective. As a matter of course, as the costs of maintaining the Oregon Short-Term Fund are spread over the participants, more participants is good for all participants.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Not seeing any, or thanks for coming forward, and I'll let you get back to your other hearing.
Thank you, sir.
Is there anybody else who would like to testify on Senate Bill 351A? Not seeing any. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 351A and open a public hearing on House Bill 3493. Bob, give us a brief description of House Bill 3493, please. Your system still giving you trouble there?
We were doing well, and now not so well. Mr. Chair, would you like me to summarize?
It must be the Senate bills that our system isn't quite accepting them yet.
You're just slow.
So, with that, Representative Fagan, would you like to introduce yourself for the record and describe to us the bill, since we can't seem to get it up right at the moment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Shamia Fagan, representing House District 51. This bill concept comes from part of a minority report that was put forward by the Republican members of the Rules Committee on House Bill 2988. And I promised my constituents that as their representative, I would support good ideas, regardless of which party originated the idea. And this bill represents one such good idea. It protects the personal information of minors if they pre-register to vote. It really is that simple. I'm willing to take any questions.
Questions from the committee. So, Representative Johnson.
Oh, go ahead if you have one, Mr. Chair. Go ahead.
You follow up with
I'll
mine?
Follow you.
So how does it protect the information?
Makes it exempt from public records requests.
Okay. Great. Follow up here.
Senator Richardson Johnson. After that eloquence. So the minority report, you're correct, didn't have this component in it. I didn't recall hearing you at least outline that issue that day. I'm just curious what's happened in the interim or since that time to bring this to the point that you would have a bill dropped, specifically just with this component in mind. I don't recall. Maybe you did on that day when the bill was up, but we had the discussion, long discussion. Many members brought up a lot of different points and so forth, but the security and safety of the miners involved, I didn't hear come from you that day. I'm just wondering why now.
Mr. Chair Holvey and Representative Johnson, this bill was not the bill that was put forward in the minority report. That bill, the concept was in there, and I, as I said, give due credit to the members who came up with that concept. That bill required miners to trade their ability to express their values through registering for a party for their privacy, and I don't think that such a trade is good policy. I believe that miners deserve protection of their personal information, period, without giving up anything in return. That day, I asked LC to draft this bill. It was during a large rush period, so it took them a little bit to get the bill back to me, but it was that day that I requested the bill draft.
Follow up, Chair. And again, you say it's, safety is a good idea. It's a pressing concern. I think we all would second that. But, there are a lot of other bills that we kind of, were dropped and kind of rushed through the process in the last 10 days or so. But this wasn't one of them. I'm wondering why your leadership might not have helped expedite the process or get it dropped, 10 days ago. And it could have been on its way to some place where right now it's just kind of an informational hearing setting.
Chair Holvey, Representative Johnson, I filed a bill, I believe, the day or the day after I received it, so it's actually been in the system for a while. Unfortunately, as a freshman, I don't assign bills, and I'm not on leadership, so I'm not able to make those decisions. But this bill concept is one that I support fully, and I'm working very hard to make sure that it ends up in a bill that we vote on and the governor signs before the end of session.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I have a question.
Oh, Representative Kinney-Geyer.
Mr. Chair, I remember some concerns raised at that hearing also that could we protect information of minors not just from the voter registration, but there were many other ways in which people could ask for information. Does this bill do that as well, or is it only protecting people asking for information for voter registration?
This bill protects minors' contact information, date of birth, et cetera, all the information that would be on a voter's registration card. Mm-hmm. Certainly any amendments that would broaden the protection would be very welcome by me.
Mm-hmm. And one more question, process-wise.
Follow up,
thank you. Can this bill go anywhere? Can it get referred anywhere?
That's a good question. We're going to... It's potential, I suppose, that it could go to rules, but I'm not positive if that's true.
Okay.
Chair Holvey, Representative Kinney-Geyer, as I said, the bill concept is all that's important to me. If it ends up in a bill that is, relating to this issues or relating to voter registration, as long as we have a chance to actually make sure the policy becomes law and that minors are protected, I couldn't be happier with that.
Thank you, and I appreciate you bringing this forward, and happy to give you this public hearing so we can keep this conversation going.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Richardson.
One point is that now that bills are over in the Senate, if your staff were to look for a relating clause of one of the bills that's already over there and get it amended over there, then it comes back and it'll slide right on through, but that's probably going to be... Unless there's a Senate bill that we can do that to over here, but one of our bills over there, so that's where we need to go now.
Chair Holvey, Representative Richardson, we are exploring all those avenues and are very optimistic.
Great, thanks.
Well, I thank you for exposing us to this concept, and I don't see any other questions. Thank you very much, and have a great afternoon.
Thank you to the committee.
Well, committee, at 26 minutes after, in case you showed up late, we did carry over one bill, Senate Bill 631, because we've been so busy. It's likely we'll carry over a bill on Thursday as well, if not two. Judging on the adjustment to floor schedules. So with that, thank you very much for attending this afternoon, and we'll see you on the floor at some point. That I adjourn, close the public hearing first on House Bill 3493, and we'll adjourn the meeting of the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency.